Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And it's a good job there's no schedule for this podcast.
Absolutely.
Because our life, and this is the reason why I did this right at the start, beginning in 2008. We're coming up to what now? 16 years worth of doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And the original blurb, like the original intro, is exactly the same. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I think. And I'm so glad I did that because we can hardly keep up a monthly podcast without a podcast.
Yes.
Our juggling podcast.
It's just so difficult to juggle it in between the life and all the things that happen.
And we have a podcast called The Juggling Podcast and we can't juggle our lives well enough to slot it in.
Once a month.
Either way, I'm saying this because I finished this book about a month ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I was like, Juliana should read this book. So we got an ebook version and you spent the last month reading it. Or you read it over the last while.
I did, yes.
And then I got a work offer. Over Christmas.
Or
just before Christmas.
Offer.
And then I was like, yeah, but I don't want to fly all the way across the Atlantic, just do one gig. And they're like, all right, back-to-back gigs and a gig in somewhere else. And I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty.
I did another gig afterwards.
And then a friend of mine a while ago had said, look, I might have to cancel a gig because some, family health kind of emergency, but he had to deal with some. And I was like, yeah, if anything comes up, I'll be happy to take that. And then he has to do that and I get a call and another mail and say, oh, you got to do this. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is I'm leaving for 5 weeks.
Yes.
Leaving me. And I will be leaving for the airport in a bit.
Yeah.
Literally in an hour and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we weren't sure. I assumed that we weren't going to fit this podcast in. And then we're like, well.
I came home from work earlier
to
spend more time with you.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay.
And then you suggested the podcast. I was like, let's do the short podcast. So let's get on with it.
Yes.
So today's podcast, our last podcast with the two of us.
This year
until January. I will do some solo podcasts because I did one of those on my last cruise. So I plan to do that a few more times.
That's good.
On these SFBRP must reads lists, the rereads of some of these things where we've discussed it before or we've discussed it. Oh, like we've done previous podcasts. So to catch up. But I still want to review every single science fiction book that I read, even if it's the second third
or
fourth or fifth reading, as it is in some of these cases.
Yeah.
So today, let's talk about this book. Let me bring this screen over here so I can see it a bit better. So we're going to be talking about When There Are Wolves Again by E.J. Swift.
Yep.
And let's check out the blurb of the book. It says an extraordinary speculative novel of the past, present and future by the Clark Award shortlisted author of The Coral Bones. I've never read The Coral Bones. Don't know anything about it.
But, the first time I've read anything from this author.
Yeah. And it says, decades from now, two women sit around a fire on Beltane, May Eve, and reflect on their life stories. And to be honest, I completely forgot that was the framing story. I just got straight into alternating chapters where two people are, one person's telling their story. I think one person tells it in the second person, like you do this, you do that, you do this.
Yeah.
And the other one is like in the first person or third person. Either way, it's like it's switching perspectives between the characters.
I probably haven't noticed that.
You didn't notice?
I don't think so.
But that's the reason why sometimes it's difficult to work out the names, because if it's told in the second person, it's all, you do this, you do this. You only hear the name or you only read the name once it's referenced.
Yes.
So it's Hester and Lucy.
Yes.
Hester is a filmmaker, and it says she was born on the day of the Chernobyl explosion.
Yes.
And she goes back to visit the Chernobyl exclusion zone and picks up a dog. It's like half dog, half wolf puppy, and takes it back home because I think the mother die or the mother wolf dies and or the mother dog dies
at the birth.
They've got this little wolf / dog hybrid, and they're sort of like, well, I'll take it back to London with me.
Yeah.
And so goes back to live. And then part of the book is about living with a half dog, half wolf hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of sets up the tone of like When There Are Wolves Again. It's about, this whole book is about like land being domesticated mm-hmm. and then becoming wild again.
Yes.
And that struggle. So, that's one part of what the book is about. Mm-hmm. And then that is reflect thematically throughout the thing. But that one of the characters literally has a half wild, half dog, like half domesticated, half wild dog with them. Mm-hmm. Wolf dog hybrid. Mm-hmm. Canine, let's just say they've got a canine with them. Or is it lupine? Is it lupine or canine? No, lupine is wolf. Yes. So I was going to say, what's the collective, kind of thing. So that's kind of like one of the main themes of the book is rewilding. So
yes,
you said you don't have many things to talk about this book.
No,
but I still want to talk about it.
Okay,
is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. No.
You say what you want to say. You obviously got some. You said you don't have much to say about it, but you've obviously got something to say about it because you're now starting to talk about it.
Yeah, it's just for me, this book is mostly like eco-fiction. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah.
In my mind, it is.
Well, now it's called climate fiction or climate science fiction. Sci-climb-fi.
Okay. And I do maybe understand that it might be science fiction, but I didn't get any science fiction out of this book.
Okay, okay. Just to be really clear. Just to be really clear.
Like a fiction, a story.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Science fiction, and again, I didn't even know that we were going to start with this thing, because for me, this is just like so unambiguously science fiction that it doesn't even matter.
Interesting.
The thing that it doesn't have, which is the opposite of some other books that we've reviewed recently, is science fiction tropes named by the author of the book. So, for example, I've recently read The Ministry of Time by Kalyan Bradley, which starts off and you're like, oh, is it science fiction or is it literary fiction or what's it about? You know, that's got some climate stuff. It's set in the future, you know, some strange stuff. But then by the end, it's sort of just like dropping these like trope mentions, like, and then we'll mention this thing and we'll mention that. And the same thing with Nnedi Okorafor, Death of the Author, which is like this meta book about somebody writing a science fiction book. And you're like, oh, right. So is that science fiction? It's like, it's not written. It's written by someone who's a science fiction author, but it's like deliberately trying to bring in new things. So it's about being a paraplegic or a quadriplegic. I can't remember what it is. But then I was like, by the end of it, she's going to get a robot body and then it's Death of the Author. And so that means she's actually going to die and she's going to have a robot body and she's also going to upload her brain to AI, you know, and she goes into space apparently. Again, I stopped reading like less than a third of the way into the book. Also, Emily St. John Mandel, Sea of Tranquility, you're like, oh, it's like this, you know, there's some stuff set in a pandemic and there's some other bits and pieces. But in the end, it's science fiction because it's deploying very clearly science fiction tropes and actually saying, right, now we are doing time travel. Now we are doing cybernetics. Now we are doing robots. Now we are doing going into space. You know, now we are doing living on the moon. Now we are doing artificial gravity. You know, it's saying all those kind of things. But what they're really wanting to do is kind of like get across a lot of this like literary novel kind of like the people who are like, it's like observing life and like there's more mundanity in a book like that because they want to observe what it's like to be in a room when it's hot, you know. And normally books, you would think of a science fiction book as having like a forward thrust to the narrative. Like, what's the next thing? What's the next action? And I say action, not as in like an action sequence, but like, what's the next thing that is going to progress the plot?
Yes.
And that's why it can get it's a bit strange reading these books because you're like, but where's my science fiction plot? Why aren't we getting on with the moving on to the next thing and revealing the next thing and coming up with the next thing? Like, where's the thriller in this?
Yeah.
And this book isn't doing that.
As in When There Are Wolves Again.
Now, to contrast with a lot of science fiction, it's not doing the forward driving thriller plot of like move on to the next thing and reveal the next thing and introduce the next thing and then like a billionaire turns up and then a scientist turns up.
It's all very concentrated on these two people.
Yeah, on these two people. But also what it's not doing, it's not kind of self-consciously dropping in the tropes of science fiction as though the author or the main character knows that they're in a science fiction book. And it's like, and now let's talk about artificial gravity. And now let's talk about the theories of time travel. And now let's talk about robotics or cybernetics. You know, it's not doing those things.
No.
It's actually all of that kind of stuff is just happening in the background. And this is very much sort of like concentrating on the lives of these two women.
Yeah.
Like these, contrasting but like parallel lives. You know, they're doing their own things in their own ways.
But their timelines meet.
Their timelines meet along the way. But all of the science fiction stuff is happening in the book. It's happening in the world.
Yeah.
It's very much there. They're talking about, all right, the billionaires are like uploading their minds into computers. It's right there. It's mentioned in the book that billionaires are uploading their minds into computers. And there's going to be like 150 of them, or maybe that's a different book as well. And it says that, you know, America has split into three countries. You know, you got Jesus Land in the middle, and then you got like the Pacific bit and the Atlantic bit. And that is pure science fiction. That's like the backdrop. And then they're saying Mars. And they, at one point, the big thing is that they're watching the third Mars mission. They're like, the first one, everyone died. And then we sent another mission to Mars and everyone died. But this is the third time it's going to, like, the third time that we're going to Mars. This is it. What this book does is contrast all of the hard problems that are normally done in science fiction, which is uploading your brain into the cloud, you know, all the political turmoil and, you know, collapsing of America and all that. And also space travel, and isn't space travel really hard? Mm. And I made a note here, going to Mars is imaginable both in the world of the book, but also in science fiction. But introducing wolves to Scotland isn't imaginable. Mm-hmm. So what this is saying is, you're talking about all these big science fiction problems, like uploading your minds into computers or going to Mars. And most science fiction books are like, oh, right, that's it. You know, going to Mars, let's just assume that's going to happen. Let's just assume it's going to work. But it's doing the clever, like, Kim Stanley Robinson Aurora kind of thing, where he's like, actually, all of that stuff that I was writing about, you know, going to colonize Mars or going to terraform Mars, that's complete fantasy. That isn't how easy. Actually, how hard it is, everybody dies or they give up and they go home is the truth of it. This book is positing, like, what would it like to be to live in a science fiction world, but your science fiction is introducing wolves to Scotland again, you know, reclaiming wetlands. Yeah.
Also, I think what actually, like, I was thinking, okay, this book feels like it's like future fiction.
Yeah.
But in the way that it's not concentrating on those major, like, science fiction, oh, let's go to Mars, let's be with these people.
Yeah.
That is all happening in the background, as you said. But let's just experience how it would feel like for, like, everyday people who live their lives and have ideas, goals, and want to do stuff, how the science fiction around them is affecting their lives and how they need to just live in that. And because it's so funny, because like Hester specifically is like a year younger than I am.
Right.
So when I was reading her story, I literally progressed in the same age bracket.
Right.
And that felt very weird, to be honest, because she was always the older.
Right.
And experienced.
So the older person, the more experienced person was a year younger than you in this book.
Yes.
But she grows up, you know, she becomes an old woman by the end of it, because she's 25 35 years older than the other character.
And because it's going chronologically forward.
Yeah.
She is aging at the same time that I'm going to age.
Yeah. I was going through this. I was like, oh, when we actually get to 2050, the year 2050, or however long
this
goes on to.
That's like when I retire from work.
I'll be 70 years old then.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, 65 or 64 or a bit older later on in the book. Yeah, so the whole point of this book is that we go through into the future. But by the end, they're using all her video equipment's changed. She's using like these little drones that buzz around, which are the size of, you know,
bees.
These bee-sized cameras. Drones that are flying around, they've got these like all the science that they have, like they have these machines which you can put stuff in and it analyzes the things and spits
and
out like
that. Health-wise,
you
know, stuff, like all the health things.
All the health stuff as well. Yeah. But here's the thing, all of that stuff is going to happen, or it may or may not happen in the future, but this is a book about how the big projects of science fiction are these big sexy things.
Mm.
Going to Mars, and it's sort of like there are challenges which are just as hard as going to Mars and will take just as long as a successful mission to Mars, but they are happening in your garden, and they are happening in the farm that your parents or your brother still works at, you know. They are happening here, they're happening there. It happens on this like neighborhood by or house, like garden to garden, neighborhood to neighborhood, like county or region to region kind of thing,
like where you actually live.
Yeah, like where you live. And it's, this is a very British book, you know. It's it's all set, well, I mean, there's a little bit in Chernobyl at the start, which is kind of like, oh, it's going to be adventurous, we're going to get, it's like, nope, we're not going to be adventurous, we're going to be in gardens in London, we're going to be in a farm on in Somerset, we're going to be up in Scotland for a bit, and we're going to be like a, you know, it's all of that, that's it, you know, that's all of the book that's happening there. But then it drops in these hints of these other big projects that are going on, like these political projects, where they're like, oh yeah, and because we all have, you know, what is it, basic guaranteed income, what is it, the basic
universal
basic universal income, because we have that, oh, we can work on these other problems. And it's sort of like, oh, that's just skipped over. And in some, it, for the people who were working on that and trying to get basic universal income put in place, that is there. 35 year long journey to kind of slowly sway public opinion, and then slowly sway political opinion, and slowly do, you know, like chip away bit by bit. And then they're like, oh yeah, and then the Liberal Democrats get into power, and off the back of one of these things, and then they did it. And then it's sort of like, oh, we're gonna, the king, you know, King Charles on his deathbed is sort of like, well, I'm gonna give away my lands, and everyone, you know, it's gonna give it over to wildlife or something. And it's just this slow, like, you know, year by year, decade by decade struggle to just sway public opinion just enough that the politicians do just enough to do this. And you're like, and if everything goes perfectly to plan, in 35 years we'll introduce one wolf to Scotland again. And that's going to be like, you know, that's like, of course, when there are wolves again, it's like, it's what it's lining up to happen here. But yeah, it's like this. But that's what I really like about it. It's that it's a really good science fiction book. But the Kim Stanley Robinson green, like red Mars, blue Mars, green Mars stuff that's going on.
Yeah,
that's happening off there, and it's saying we here are doing something just as science fictional.
Yeah.
And again, going to Mars in science fiction is a very easy sell. It's a very easy thing to imagine. And in the book, it's a very easy thing to imagine. But introducing wildlife back into England and Scotland, in this case, or the British Isles, is unimaginable for the characters in the book that it would be possible.
Yeah.
And this book is challenging us to say, why is the political and, you know, climate and not just climate, but, you know, like ecological optimism and ecological goals in this, why does that feel less real or less science fictional in your case? Like, where's the science fiction in this? I'm like, no, the whole book is positing what science, like, what is the goal of, like, people and, you know, in this case, the, you know, the climate and ecology kind of stuff, but also the people, like you as a reader, why does this feel less science fictional than something with robots and space adventures?
Well, I think first of all, we're kind of trained on the other stuff.
Yeah.
And also, it's one of those things that comes time and time again. It's one of those mindsets where everybody thinks of themselves, they are personally closer to a billionaire than they are to a homeless person on the street.
Yeah.
And this kind of viewpoint, because this is always like reflected, like it's always like you need to aim for more and better and more money and whatever. But in fact, we are all
the adventure,
so much closer to the other side than
and
to
this book. This book has a homeless person adventure moment going on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a billionaire, you know, going on a trip to Mars or uploading their brain to Earth. And again, our science fiction reading, we're conditioned to think we're going to go on an adventure with the billionaire or, you know, world famous scientist who's going to change the world.
And so this is this idea that we think of ourselves close, but being closer to being the astronaut on the spaceship that heads out somewhere.
Yeah. We're Mark Watney. No, like no, what's his name?
Yeah, yeah.
Mark Watney.
That we are closer. We think of ourselves closer to people like that, rather than the people who stay back on Earth and have to live through all the climate disasters and stuff. And also, it's the same. this conundrum that we are like kind of so trained on this idea. And also then what authors in the past have done with what's the Californias, where there's literally
the three Californias.
There's literally an author telling the story. Like the focus of that is like, you know, we think of ourselves that we are going to tell the stories to the kids about all of the great things and whatever things have happened.
But who gets to tell the story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also what I think in this book is really fun, how it shows how the future happens, first of all, in your lifetime.
Yes.
And changes take one or two lifetimes. Like it takes generations.
Yeah. No, but also I think this is... Late, like as the book goes on, it's just assumed that everybody has a pandemic story. I think there are some events which can accelerate science fiction-y kind of stuff.
Yes.
And this book assumes that in the future, well, like a lot of books do, that there's going to be another pandemic. You know, there's like another time when everyone gets closed down.
It's quite likely.
You know, and also it's, again, like these things that happen, like, oh, suddenly there's this just new technology or whatever, you know, you don't need this or you do need this. And everybody's house changes or, you know, everyone's house is being rebuilt in a different way because, you know, the climate has changed enough that, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I do think that this shows that history is some things can happen slowly, but because it is like almost self-consciously avoiding using science fiction tropes. And when I say just tropes, I'm not just talking about like space travel or, you know, robotics or artificial intelligence or, you know, whatever it's going to time travel, you know, like some of these other books.
Yeah.
It's much, much more specifically saying like that the tropes that I'm going to work against are the thriller novel forward towards action storytelling that a lot of science fiction is. And I think that's the thing that trips you up. It's sort of like, well, I'm reading a science fiction book. Where's the, you know, where's the time when one of them makes a big discovery which changes the world? And it's sort of like, that isn't what the book is about.
Yeah.
This book is about slow, incremental, you know, swaying of public opinion and leaving up to the professional politicians to make, you know, it's kind of like very, I heard someone else, or maybe I read another book. Oh, no, I think they mentioned it on one of the, you know, the Critical Friends podcast that we listened to. They mentioned this book in one of their episodes. And they were saying that it's actually kind of quite strange to have a science fiction book where all of the political progress happens like in the House of Commons and in the House of Lords. That's kind of almost like a radical reading of what the future should be. Is that, oh, what we should do is if we leave it up to the politicians, they'll make the right decisions.
Yeah.
Which is insane to have that in a science fiction book. That is the opposite of all other science fiction books, that if we leave it up to the House of Commons and the House of Lords and literally the King of England, we're like it's like the highest point of all of the British political institutions coming together to make good decisions about climate and good decisions about ecology and good decisions about, you know, this, you know, all this stuff. That is insane. And again, that is less imaginable and less acceptable as a fictional premise than people going to Mars, like, and billionaires uploading their brains into AI.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. And again, I think there is a lot of political stuff which is going on in this book, which weirdly, I think the main, like especially Lucy, is a little bit oblivious to.
Yeah.
Like, she's sort of like going, la, 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 I'm going to go up to Balmoral. And I'm like, there's a whole other stuff going on here. Yeah. Like, this person's a witch and this person's a, you know.
There were a few things where I just got a bit confused about, where like, like actually a witch or like what's happening?
No. Again, it's like that she's bumping up against people with like strong opinions in different ways, and you can see, you know, and even on the people on the other side, what's the nemesis at some point who she fights in a pub in I can't remember his name now, but
Scott? No.
No. He has like a code name because he's like an internet name. You know, got like his handle.
Britannia 4231. Yeah, 402 or whatever.
So that character has like it's weird, like you're going, ah, there are people who are trying the things that would normally come up in a science fiction novel, and in some cases they're like over to the side and you don't notice them, And other times they're like the nemesis. They're like the antagonist in the book. The person who is doing that is sort of like doing the action that would normally be done in a science fiction book. And of course, it's cast as someone who's very right-wing and anti-immigrant and all this other kind of stuff. But it's like, like it's like the other side, you know, like in a normal book, it would be the person who is like, no, I've got to do it. I've got to rise up. I've got to, you know, I've got to go out there with my gun. I've got to make a political statement. I've got to do all. In a lot of science fiction books, that would be the thing. And this book is denying, not denying that, but it's spinning the opposite tale.
Or I would even say in other books, the focus would be on one big thing that everybody's focusing on.
Yeah.
And what we're reading in When There Are Wolves Again is all happening in the background of those big sites. This pulls the focus on something.
I don't think it's wanting to say it's happening in the background, because these people do go to Balmoral and there is a big political sit-in. You know, there is like a years long political process that they're known for. You know, they're so it's not like and Hester is like an award winning documentary maker. So I wouldn't say that they're just background. It's that there isn't anyone who is the normal hero of this book.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think they are background characters. I think they are main characters.
Well, yes, they are.
But the actual main characters is like the King of England and the Prime Minister of England and the House of Lords.
Going to Mars that they are watching.
No, in this story, the people going to Mars are the background.
Yes. But okay.
The background, the background characters in this book.
Yeah.
The scientists who are uploading their brains.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the people going to Mars
are background characters.
A backdrop for this, what we're seeing.
What I'm saying is that the characters that we're following aren't background characters in a bigger story.
No, but if there would be another science fiction book written about the situation or what we are looking at, the characters that we spend time with might be mentioned.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in this story, there aren't any other main characters. These aren't the background characters. Like,
you don't understand what I'm saying.
No, I do understand what you're saying. And I'm saying that this book, it can't be that, because there isn't a main character science fiction character in this story.
No, there isn't.
It isn't. So these people aren't the background characters for another one. Isn't what it is.
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is that in
one more try.
Okay. Just try to listen to me
now,
okay?
Listening. Yeah.
There are science fiction books.
Right.
That talk about the big drama of a big science fiction development.
Yeah.
The big thing.
Yeah.
Or that people concentrate on as being the big thing. Like the three people that in this story now are going to Mars. So another book by some other author or like another science fiction book would be concentrating on that.
Yeah.
And then while they're writing this story about the people traveling to Mars and whatever, they would mention that
a documentary filmmaker and a protester.
Exactly.
Right.
That's
okay.
What I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But what you do is you're saying my same point again, is that why this doesn't feel like a science fiction story is that there isn't a pioneer. There isn't a scientist. There isn't a leader. There isn't a warrior. You know, there isn't there isn't that kind of hero.
And even if they are going out and trying to do some big things like the stuff at Balmoral, it's fading away because things just happen like that.
Yeah.
Like you can keep up something for this long.
Yeah.
And at some point the focus will shift to something else and you will still be there. For you it's important, but for the world and for politics around you it isn't important anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that's the really strong factor of this, is that it shows how everyday life, what you are standing up for and what you are doing is just progressing.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't want...
if you don't want it. Like, the world keeps going on. Like, it's that current thing. Like, what is the current thing? Mm. You're like, what is the current thing? Oh, I thought it was the Balmoral opening its gates and that's not the current thing anymore. And then they're living up there in another winter in Scotland. And they're like, oh, when this was the current thing, this was much easier. But that's the hard... I guess that's what the difficult lesson, or one of the lessons is that, it's going to take maybe... Are you ready? 12 years later, mm-hmm. you're still going to be working on this thing.
Yep.
And this is a book about people who are still working on something 12 years later.
Yeah.
So this is also, I made a note here that this is the opposite of the book Venomous Lumpsucker by Ned Bowman.
Okay.
And that is a book which is very much, it's like, again, if you want to read a book which is the opposite of this, which is about extinction credits. So it's not about reintroducing wildlife. Mm-hmm. It's about like killing wildlife. And in that book, billionaires turn up and people who are uploading their brains turn up. And it's, you know, they also have the collapse of America and all this stuff. But yeah, it's sort of like starting from the current and then just going, rather than this one, which is like, is it going to get better?
Yeah.
So, and also again, forward driving plot thriller, main characters, you know, doing stuff and achieving stuff and wanting to get to their goals. Mm-hmm. Plus all of like the cyberpunky, like, you know, evil corporations that we're fighting against.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, so yes, I think When There Are Wolves Again and Venomous Lumpsucker, two books which I very much enjoyed, but are very, like, almost self-consciously the opposite books to each other.
Yeah.
So we, for a while, watched these videos from a YouTube channel called Mossy Earth.
Yes.
And which is all about, we're going to reintroduce beavers into this river here. And then it's like, now we're going to plant some corals here and we're going to put some seaweed over here. Mm-hmm. And they do this piecemeal, like one field at a time,
one river at a time,
one project at a time. And it's a bit, at the start, you're like, yay, that looks fun. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, and we're going to come back next year and there's going to be like an extra river and there's going to be like more fish here and there's going to be a kingfisher and, and all that kind of stuff. And after a while, you're like, oh, right, yes, this is very much, I wouldn't say fantasy, because they're doing what the people in this book do, you know, the Mossy Earth. But this novel is like, all right, you watch Mossy Earth, and instead of it being some kind of weird pyramid scheme startup thing, I don't know what it is. Again, I don't have any knowledge about, you know, Mossy Earth as a thing, but it's sort of like a subscription program where you kind of like feel less guilty living
in. You fund things directly.
Yes, but you're funding it. But what are you actually funding? Are you actually funding your like guilt removal of living in the world and throwing away plastic instead of recycling? You know, again, I'm not saying that's what Mossy Earth. I don't know anything about the business model. I don't know anything about it. But it feels like this, you know, like this activism.
Greenwashing?
No, not greenwashing, but it's like activism for this activism.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Which is as much about political messaging as it is about the project itself.
Yeah.
Because if it was actually about the project itself, they would do they wouldn't be taking, you know, subscriptions from individuals. They would be trying to get like grants from governments and grants from businesses and grants from agencies and grants from all that kind of stuff. And then like again, I'm
that
not
is
saying
much harder than getting that's what I'm saying is that like
it's
person.
A weird balance. And in the end, I unsubscribed from the channel. And again, not because the videos were bad. It always felt like there is like this. It felt like there's like this missing step or this missing understanding that again it kept on leaning into like charismatic megaflora and megafauna rather than what we actually need to do is
make
stop
sure the
drilling
insects
oil.
Don't die. Make sure the insects.
No,
don't
it's
die.
Not about that. It's about like, okay, let's stop mining coal.
Yeah.
And let's stop. You know, like it feels like it's scratching an itch, and it feels really good to scratch an itch. But if you've got leprosy, you might there's a little bit more to deal with than just scratching the itch.
Yeah.
And this novel, When There Are Wolves Again, feels like. Actually, just scratching the itch. If you just keep scratching it, people will stop digging coal out of the ground, and everything will be converted over to solar. And there's nothing wrong with that. I really like the optimism. You know, like if you're gonna do something about, you know, ecological collapse.
Yeah.
But you want some optimism there.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
And it's one of those weird things that's sort of like, oh, and the fix isn't a billionaire comes along and invents green machine, which, you know, chews up old industrial waste and spits out, you know, utopia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot slower than that. Like I say, it's a book that goes a long way into the future.
Yeah.
So
it's quite hard work.
And it's hard work. But yeah, but the guys at Mossy Earth also work really hard to reintroduce, you know, insects into a
and
forest.
I totally understand that. But it sometimes also feels like there are lots of these little companies like that out there who do these kind of crowdfunded, hey, let's do this here and let's do that there and let's do this there. But then I'm always thinking like, but wait a second, wouldn't it be better if you all just combined all
If you all get together and try and solve the root cause of the societal problems rather than like doing this little bit of charity there and little
the
bit of charity
here. The thing is, with this kind of stuff is always you have to know that you're up against massive lobbies.
Yeah. Like, but here's the thing.
Huge lobbies.
But in the end, the environmental movement in this novel has like King Charles on their side,
yes,
which is sort of like, oh, that could swing it, if you know what I mean. Like, so it's not just pie in the sky thinking. Mm. It's sort of like, I don't know, just scratching an itch. Again, not trying to say anything bad about Mossy Earth. I'm just saying that it's weird for it to be like posited in fiction that connection is enough, or that kind of thing is enough. And it's made very clear that like the UK is a long way behind the rest of Europe,
yes,
because this is so focused on only stuff that's happening there. They're like, yeah, well, Europe's already got beavers everywhere, mm-hmm. and they've already sorted out their lowlands and wetlands and forests, you know, and they've already stopped doing the coal, and we're doing a bit more of that because we've still got this to go, and we're still trying to fix that.
Yeah.
Because England is just like a lot less wild than anywhere else. It's got a lot less nature. It's like this big...
It doesn't not have that nature. It has just destroyed way more of it. Because it's an island.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so highly populated and so densely populated and so cut off from everything.
In certain places, in other places, it isn't.
No, it is. There isn't any way that beavers are swimming across the English Channel and reintroducing themselves.
Yeah.
Like, where we live is a place where they're growing more concerned about wolves coming back, because there's wolves over on the Polish border.
Yeah.
But wolves don't care about the river Elbe or whatever's over there. No, Oder. Like, they just come across and they're fine, you know, and they'll just go further and further into Brandenburg and further, you know, like that kind of stuff. But there is no wolf swimming across to Scotland, you know. So just from an ecological point of view, that islandness is a big thing.
Yeah.
And that's what this book is about. You know, it's about like, and of course it's about many more layers than
UK
that.
The UK has to solve way more difficult and other problems than other places around.
Right. Yeah. I've got like three more notes here.
Yeah.
And then we can finish up.
Yeah.
Haven't really talked anything at all about Hester or Lucy. Do you have anything to say about them? I just made a note of them.
No, it feels very much like one is a millennial and one is a Gen Z. And I think like written really well, as in that I can really see myself in one, and I understand what the other one is going through, and how different she is just by being a different generation.
So here's my notes.
Yeah.
I cried a few times in this book.
Aww.
But it's quite... I wouldn't say it's quite easy, but like to have like a gentle book and then someone's grandfather dying, and then I'm like, oh, my father died a few years ago.
Hitting
like
hard.
2 years into the pandemic, or 2 years after, like whatever it was, like a year and a half into the pandemic, my father died. And then the same thing happens with this. And then the grandmother is all like wanting to be independent and like strong and cutting people off. And they're like, oh, I don't want to do it. And I'm like, yeah, my mother wants to be independent. You know, it's not like because it's the same similar generation.
Yes.
Like, you know, almost exactly the same generation. If you think about the age of Lucy and her grandparents, that's, you know, very much like...
Kind of your parents.
Well, my parents and my nieces and, you know...
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Of them going up there, nieces, nephews all being up there. So I'm just saying there's a bit, there was quite a bit there. And there was a few other times as well where I'm like, oh no, we get a children. And I found this book very moving in some ways.
Yes, it is.
Any complaints that I have about this book is very much about like, it's a difficult book to do something long ranging over the course of a long time. And there's different ways you can get around this as well, which is that you have very short chapters and you just say this happened and then another chapter, this happened and then a chapter. And the other way you can do it as well is like by having someone tell stories. Mm-hmm. Like this is a story about people reflecting on the most important things and the most important parts of their life.
Yeah.
Generally is, I guess, what the framing story is.
Yeah.
But what this does lead to is the collapsing of many dramatic things into like the same day. And just to not give any, like, I don't want to do any spoilers, but like, it's like the day that the meteor strikes is the same time as your father dies and your wife tells you that she's pregnant and also someone who you've never met in your life turns up and wants you to sign some document that you're going to inherit a thing. You know, it's sort of like, oh, and that all four of those things happen on the same day. It's like, yeah, what are the coincidences, you know?
Yeah.
There's this movie called, I think it's just called Jobs or Steve Jobs. and it's set on three different days of product announcements. Sort of like we're gonna. The first time is that they're introducing like the Mac, the original Mac.
Yeah.
The next one is that they're introducing like the. I don't know, like the iPhone, and there's another one where they're, like there's like three different product announcements, yeah. And the drama comes from like now we're here, and now history repeats itself, and of course you can't just have them those one things happening at the same time. Like on one day, Steve Jobs acknowledges that he's got a daughter that he gave up for adoption, and that she comes back. You know, there's a you know, and then the next time, so his wife is coming back to him with this stuff, and like and at one point in the movie they say, isn't it strange how these things just keep coming up, and like on these one days where everything's really important, all yeah. these big things are happening. I'm like, yes, and you have a major falling out with your partner, and then you have this, yeah. and then you've got to go on stage and announce the new iPhone or yeah. whatever it's going to be, and you're like, oh no, that those things don't all happen on yeah. the same day, but for like, dramatic
from
purposes,
storytelling point of view, it's very helpful.
And this book, it was getting to the point where, look, not everything important can happen on the same day. Mm. But it was multiple times where there was these not just minor coincidences, but like these major coincidences that kept coming up, especially in Lucy's life. Because yeah. again, Hester is a bit more, I wouldn't say passive, but like she's documenting things yeah. and sort of like she's always trying to keep a bit separate away from things. But yeah, you're like, okay, there has to be some unusual things happen, because otherwise, like, why would you be concentrating on these?
Yeah.
But when it gets to the point, like there, it's remarkable how Lucy has these coincidences in her life, like massive, life-changing things that happen to her. But three of them happen to her all on the same day.
Yeah.
And that happens multiple times. And yeah. I'm like, again, just from a storytelling point of view, I'm like, I can believe that there's wolves in... I can believe that people are going to Mars. I can believe that people are uploading their consciousnesses into computers. I can believe that there's, you know, wolves in Scotland again. But some of the coincidences that were happening to Lucy, I was like... it's just difficult for me to suspend disbelief. And then I'm thinking, but is this, like, again, you get to the end and you're like, we're telling stories around it. Sort of like, are these stories like her mythologizing, like, you know, when you come back and go, oh yeah, that was the day that yeah. I, you it's know, crashed my car, flipped yeah. over, my life changed, I didn't go back to university, and I flashed 11 balls for the first time yeah. on that same day. You're like, well, that does happen, but that's happened to me like once, when two things have happened to me which yeah. I can like pinpoint to the yeah. same day.
But then at the same time, you have people who are narrating their own life stories
yeah.
and they can be unreliable. Like, there's no rule against that. They yeah. they can't just mix up some bits together.
No, it's fine. And, but I'm just saying,
but
that
I understand.
From a storytelling yeah. point of view, it's hard to yeah. do. Something happens. 5 years later, yeah. here's another bit of the story. Yeah. 5 years later, here's another bit. Without telling the bits in between.
Yes.
Because it's like difficult to go over everything.
Yeah.
But in some ways it's fun, because you pass over that and you're like, well, yeah, in the last 5 years, universal basic income has been put in place.
Yeah. And we don't want to concentrate on that.
And that's just, well, that happened 3 years yeah. ago. And the last time I caught up with the story was 5 years mm-hmm. ago. And that's 3 years ago. And now it's normal.
Yeah.
So we don't talk about, you know.
It sometimes felt to me that the gaps that, or like the jumps that
yeah.
the time was making sometimes were too big for me, or like
yeah.
too, like there, it didn't feel like there was a progression in
yeah it
in
wasn't a continuity. You had to kind of re-get to know the characters again
yeah.
and get to know the situation again. It's like
yeah.
okay, where are we now
yeah.
oh now we're back down here, oh and that person's now got three kids yes. or whatever it is
yeah, yeah. yeah, that's kind of stuff. Yeah,
all right, those are the ends of my notes. Do you have any final thoughts about the book?
No, except that I really enjoyed reading this book.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
Was it a good recommendation saying from Luke, like, Juliana
yeah.
will like this book?
Yes, it was. And it sometimes takes me a bit to talk about a book to
yeah.
actually really grasp what I read.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I'm then reading often very things on face value.
Yeah.
Which can feel very comfortable
yeah.
to me. So
what, like you say, wasn't science fiction for
yeah.
me. And it's only when I say this is a more, this book is saying more about science fiction than most books do
yeah.
about science fiction.
So I totally understand
yeah.
the book way better now than I did,
yeah.
what, 40 minutes ago?
Yeah, 44 minutes and 7 seconds ago.
Yeah, but I really like it. I also like the whole aspect of the eco-fiction joined together with some hopefulness, because that's something at the moment that kind of everybody's craving.
The opposite of venomous lump sucker.
Yeah. it feels very much like, I haven't read that book.
No, but it is just, venomous lump sucker. It's so grim that it's kind of hopeful in a way, like, well, this is satire and it can't be this bad. And you're like, honestly, I actually see a bit more When There Are Wolves Again in my future than I do Venomous Lumpsucker, just because I'm just generally a bit more hopeful.
That's good. Let's all hope for that.
What do you mean?
That there are wolves again.
I don't care about wolves.
No,
I don't care about that. I do care about... No, what I want to say is that, like... No, I don't want to get into it, because then I'm going to be like Luke's philosophy of like having to live in the world where things are grim, and I'm like, no, generally it's good, and it's like, oh, but is it good? And then I'm like, well, I don't like the way that I live my life is like not putting the pressure of things going bad in the world onto it. I don't allow that to affect my own day-to-day emotional responses.
Yeah. But at the moment it's a bit hard.
No, it isn't hard.
For me, it is.
Because I can, it's like that intellectual kind of, like that kind of like in slightly intellectual distancing break kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is that I can keep up to date with the world and I can, you know, worry about the problems, but me worrying about problems and seeing things are grim, I can't let, like, I don't let those things, or I try not to, because it doesn't always work, but I try not to let those things impact my, like, emotional state.
Your well-being.
My well-being. Yeah. I have other ways and other things to do, like activities and projects and people and, you know,
that makes sense.
Community building and all the kind of things that I do, which bring me joy, which... I allow, like, the, you know, the community building and the friendships and family and all that other kind of stuff. I allow that to bring me joy.
Yeah.
And I don't scroll through Twitter and do doom scrolling and other things, you know, and I don't keep up to date with those kind of, well, I do keep up to date, but again, it's like, I don't allow it to. And so what my point is that a book like this for me is me allowing, it's kind of like a nice thing for me to allow something to affect me emotionally in a kind of controlled way, in the same way that like reading Venomous Lumpsucker, it allows me to like appreciate an emotionally interact, emotionally resonate, let something emotionally resonate with me
in the opposite direction.
but on my terms. It's like, do you want to be scared about climate change, or do you want to be scared by a scary movie? And I'm like, oh, scary movie is a lot more fun to be scared at than existential dread about, you know, the political climate and all that kind of stuff. So
cool.
So no, it's not cool. It might be stupid, but again, I feel like I'm slightly, I feel like I'm definitely a happier person than I was when I was like reading political blogs daily, like subscribing to political
that
blogs
makes sense.
And I'm like, oh, actually that is a bit different, that's you know.
And also these are things that you don't have direct impact on.
Well, again, the things that I do have direct impact on, which is community building and
so you're
creativity
concentrating on that.
And that kind
that
of
makes
stuff
sense.
And that's what I rely on. So anyway, that's all I'm trying to say is it's fun to read a book which is like slightly in tune with me, in that the political stuff is happening, but you need to find happiness in your own projects, in your own other stuff, rather than
makes sense.
Rather than doing that. Again, I'm not saying anyone needs to go and live in a tent for 6 years or
unless
whatever.
Unless they really want that.
Unless they really want that. If that really is the thing that you want to do.
And really plan on then holding it out.
No plan. Just dumb student going like, what are we going to do? Student protest for the win.
Yes.
Right, that's it.
How are you going to rate it?
I'm going to rate it 4.5 stars.
Okay.
It doesn't get 5 stars for me because it's very good. And I think it's almost the best it could possibly be at the thing that it's trying to be and it's trying to do. And again, this is for me the one of these books which is sort of like, on the face of it, is it science fiction or not? Mm-hmm. And it's doing that the cleverest. It's doing it. Is this science fiction or is it literary fiction? It's sort of like, it's like, no, it's chocked full of science fiction-y stuff. But it doesn't just do these trope bomb drops into the storyline. Yeah. And now, political thriller, and you've got to go shoot your way out of a problem with Time Lords. And you're like, oh, I thought we were doing something different here.
At the end, you get the money and the king and the title and the girl.
And at the end, it turns out something, something, something. And you're like, oh, I was just like, oh, I wanted it just to be the more literary fiction living in the world book. And this book does that.
Yeah.
And it has all the clever science fiction stuff, but it doesn't name the tropes.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't signpost the tropes to say, no, really, this is science fiction. And of course it's science fiction because, you know, it's going to be nominated for the best science fiction on Goodreads.com People's Reader's Choice Award, you know.
Yeah.
This doesn't get there, you know what I mean? It's a lot more, it's talking about science fiction a lot more subtly than...
Yeah, it's...
Other books which aren't science fiction, but then go, and time travel.
Yeah, and I think it is in that respect really interesting to read a book that does that.
Yeah,
and
read a book that's cleverer than I thought possible.
Yeah, nice.
Anyway, but again, it doesn't all hang together perfectly. But still, 4.5 stars is better rating than 95% of books that I've read.
I think I also give it 4.5 stars.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up there. 4.5 stars. Right, we are leaving to the airport in half an hour.
Yep.
And let's get packed up. I'll take a photo of us pointing at a book each.
Yes.
And that's it. You can follow me on Goodreads. I checked out the other people's reviews of this. Do you want to check out all my friends and followers who have reviewed this book?
A few, because we're actually want to wrap it up.
No, zero.
Oh.
8 people have it on their want to read list,
I guess it's very new, isn't
it? It's a pretty new book. Yeah. When did it come out? October 9th. It was a pretty new book.
Yeah.
I'd seen it mentioned on some, you know, interesting books coming out and stuff.
Makes sense.
And since I read it, they mentioned it on the podcast, the Critical Friends podcast, which I've enjoyed catching up with bit by bit. Right. So, yes, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. You can become my friends on Goodreads so I can see what you think of this book when you finally review it. I will see the reviews.
And I'm interested in seeing what people are thinking about it.
Yeah, and you can, I was going to say, you can message me there, but Goodreads is removing the messaging feature. So you can't message me there. So email me or go over to the goodreads.com SFBRP listener group and throw in some mentions there. Someone was like, hey, you should listen to this because we did an episode about Adrian Tchaikovsky. They're like, he's got a podcast that him and Emma Newman, you're fans of them. So they talk about their influences or books that influenced them when they were younger or that they've read and appreciated and that kind of shaped them as an artist. Mm-hmm. And I listened to 2 episodes talking about books that I'd read.
Okay.
And it's perfectly fine. But it turns out both of those authors, I have very little interest in them talking about like what their favorite TV show from the 90s is. It's like, yeah, they're British TV shows from the 90s. Like, it's not going to not be Star Trek and Red Dwarf and, you know, like...
There's a limited... Whatever.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm not going to learn anything by like knowing that Adrian Tchaikovsky has read... Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm like, you just read his book. And like, it's not going to surprise me that he's read these other people. It's like, yeah, you read the book and you know that he's read those books and that they shaped him as an author because he's very clear in his books where his influences come from by naming things and doing things and then like referencing science fictional ideas from other books and then him doing his own twist on them. I'm like, yeah, I can tell what books you've read. And I was like, I don't need
by
to
just
listen
reading
to a podcast.
Your books.
I mean, nothing wrong with the podcast, but I was like, oh, I'm probably not going to get as much out of this as then just reading his next novel that I've not got to yet because he publishes 3 or 4 a year. Right then. Cool. So anyway, keep suggesting other podcasts again on the SFBRP listener group. It's a good use of that. Right, that's it from me, and I will see you again, and I'll see you, Leon, again in 5 weeks time, and we'll do another joint episode if we've read the same book.
Yeah, let's
Otherwise,
see what's next.
I'll do a few more solo episodes before the end of the year, catching up with the books I've read this year, which I haven't reviewed yet.
Yep.
And that's it. So that's it from me and Juliana. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.